Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello, this is Three Bean Salad, Extra Beans. Extra, 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 extra. Hooray! Now, obviously, the big news for us today is 1 year of Three Bean Salad.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Happy Bean Day to us.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Bean Day to us. Happy Bean Day, Mr. President. Happy Bean Day to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And boys, I haven't told you about this.
Yeah.
But I've invited a special guest onto the podcast.
Okay.
To help us celebrate. It's Russell Crowe.
Oh, mate.
Guys, you've done incredible work this last year.
Happy Beaniversary,
yeah.
Russell.
Yeah,
Russell, I've got you this selection of paninis. We had an email from your assistant that said that if he comes to a birthday party, he needs at least 12 different flavours of panini. So I've got them all here. I've got the champignon mushrooms you asked for.
I like champignon mushrooms. Yeah, my favourite kind of mushroom, yeah.
I've got the champignon mushrooms and egg.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There's one with a snooker ball in it, in case...
in case things get tasty, in the other way. I like that. Mm-hmm. Mate, this is really great. I'm sure it's just a mistake or a little part of the joke, but you've not organised them and welded them together into the shape of a trident. Obviously, I only eat paninis now in the shape of a trident. It's a joke, right?
On the email from your assistant, she said, oh, yes, can you put the paninis in the shape of a trident? But I just thought that was a joke because...
You're the fucking joke. Russell Crowe only eats paninis in the shape of a fucking trident. Okay. I'm leaving.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, okay.
Bye, Russell.
Sorry, Russell.
Sorry, bye.
Sorry.
Oh, guys, I'm sorry. I feel like I've kind of ruined our birthday.
And I suppose we were hoping to have a good old sort of full 45 minutes of just listening to Russell Crowe eat paninis and enjoy the eating of the paninis, which is, you know, is obviously the audio holy grail.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, I wondered if we were going to reach that then. But like so many other podcasts, we've fallen at the Crowe hurdle. Oh, well. But nonetheless, it's a happy time. It's a happy day.
Yes, thanks for listening for the last year. Those of you that
and supporting,
yeah, as well, amazing.
Thank you very much.
Enormously appreciated.
You know, when we started this podcast, in my wildest dreams, I expected it to be a lot more successful than this and a lot quicker. but, you know, those were really, really wild. Those were literally my wildest dreams. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean.
You'd hope this would be a springboard to political office as well.
Yeah, that's one of my, yeah.
Ownership of a Fortune 500 company.
Instead, all you have is the controlling interest in a cafe called the Dragon Soup Cafe.
Mm. The Soup Dragon Cafe.
Oh, God.
Dragon Soup is a very different concept. And you'd have to kill Theopithetus to
What, to release his inner dragon so you can milk it?
What a soup. You don't have to... I don't think you necessarily have to milk something to soup it.
Is that not what chicken soup is?
About a month ago, and I didn't milk the carrots, but maybe I was doing it wrong. It wasn't very good, to be fair.
So what did you do? Did you bargain with the carrot?
I bargained with the carrot.
To give up its juice.
That didn't go well either.
To give up its soup.
And then things got out of hand, and before I knew it, I'd mashed it into tiny bits. And it haunts me to this day.
So, what are the episodes we've got?
Snow, mountains, maps, and tusks.
It's funny, isn't it, how all the episodes this month weirdly sort of feel like they're in the same sort of theme world, I've just realised. Because you've got mountains.
You could certainly have them all together, couldn't you?
Which have snow on them.
And walrus. Right. The mountain walrus, of course.
Yeah. And which will often be marked out, mm-hmm. zones where mountain walruses are heavy, on a map, won't it?
That's right.
Well, do you think that as we continue to record Three Bean Salads, that potentially a message will come out through the beam machine, word by word,
theme by theme. The bean machine is channeling some sort of higher intelligence, some higher power.
I think sort of Ouija board. Is it possible? Because
exactly, yeah.
there is occult technology, isn't there, in the bean machine, Ben?
It's been blessed and counter-blessed a number of times by various shamans. And
the thing is, though, what's tricky, Ben, is it's now been cursed and blessed so many times that we've lost track that we don't actually know if it's currently cursed or blessed, do we?
No, you can normally tell by the picture of the hum that comes out of it.
Yeah. But look, I mean, the fact is that the bean machine, it's been going for a year now, hasn't it?
And for every year it's running, it takes off 3 years of Ben's life, doesn't it?
That's true.
That's right.
That's true.
So good on you, Ben.
Yeah. So they're getting ever closer, aren't they? Those two horizons. Those two horizons are racing towards each other, aren't they?
But you know what? It's making me, you know, live every day with a bit more zip. You know, I'm making
the most
of things.
You've never looked better, frankly.
Yeah, thanks.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Also, to know the method of your death as well.
Yeah.
To know that we're going to have to one day ship you out to a nuclear testing site, to an atoll, because only that will be safe enough away from.
You were on the phone last week to Diego Garcia, weren't you?
They were really helpful. Those guys down there, actually, because they've got it all set up, you know. And Henry and I get to get a decent viewing platform as well, because we wouldn't want to miss out on that.
But can I just say, I'd really like it if you two could both press the button that encases me in concrete.
At the same time when
it starts flowing, if you two could press it, that would be good. Or maybe just bring in a celeb to do it.
Oh yeah,
someone I'd appreciate. Yeah,
you know what? We had this little cute idea, didn't we, Mike? That Pam might actually operate the lever with her mouth.
Yes, that would be lovely, especially if we're streaming it, because some of our listeners might want us to stream that. That'd be exactly the sort of thing.
But also, that will free up you two to hurl yourselves into the concrete after me.
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about that, actually.
Yes.
Because that was the contract, wasn't it? When I said, look, doing this bean machine is going to take years off my life. Yeah. And you said, well, don't worry, we'll, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah, we had that discussion where, you know, one of us was going to have to take the bean machine.
Yeah.
So we made an agreement that all three of us would perish simultaneously.
It's a soft agreement, I would say.
Yeah, it was, I mean, what is a contract? Do you know what I mean? we shook hands on it, but...
Well, the thing is, Ben, when you've been exploded and encased and sunk, that actually Henry and I have been talking. Actually, there's a few other things that he and I would like to do.
Podcast-wise.
Well, no, just neither of us have been to Guatemala. Both of us would like to learn the tango.
We've both only seen Avatar once.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think actually knowing that you're going to perish. Ben, at the hands of the bean machine, in a way, weighs quite heavy on us, doesn't it, Mike? I think to watch Avatar for the second time, it'd be nice to know that you're out of the way, in a way, Ben. Do you know what I mean? You'll be remembered, but...
Yeah, we've even already ordered a tandem bike that we're going to name after you. Neither of us have ever cycled around the inner bypass in Coventry before. So there's just a lot of stuff that we want to do, and it will be honouring you throughout.
You'll be honouring me with your actions.
Well, I wouldn't say that, with our thoughts, probably, with some of our deeper thoughts.
Yeah, so certainly quite deep thoughts. You know, Ben, you'll always live on in our pasts. you will exist in our pasts. Not strictly in our minds, is it? Because we're looking into a hypnotist, aren't we, Mike? To excise Ben completely from our
we think
from our
that's,
deep
that's probably the best way of getting on with things.
Well, also especially if you're there at the moment when the bean machine does finally, kind of take my life. You will want to forget that because from what I've read, I've been reading quite a lot about what it's going to be like in it.
Well, it's going to be like 1,000 cogs erupting from inside a pork chop. That's what they say it's going to look like.
Yeah.
1,000 hot cogs
Some of which are freezing cold, some of which are boiling hot.
Yeah, some of which are liquid. There'll be molten cogs just flying out.
We can move on. Sorry, there's some massive... Oh, there it is.
Is it a fly?
it's a twin-rosed fly. Yeah.
A Chinook fly.
It's a Chinook fly.
They're the worst.
Welcome to Three Bean Salad Extra Beans, including extra bits from the shells, bonus material, exclusive content, and miscellaneous.
Extra bits.
Extra, extra. Beans all about it.
Extra bean. Never been heard bean before.
That was a fabulous meal, thank you. And if we could just have a look at your beans trolley.
So, like a snowflake, each little nugget of three bean banter is unique.
Lovely. Well done.
And when they pile together, they create problems for local travel infrastructure.
Yeah. Exacerbations of respiratory illness in some cases.
And yet to watch a chunk of our freshly minted banter fall and land on a puppy's nose for the first time, they say, is one of the most delightful things that a human being can witness.
That's right. And not all of the individual flakes of banter made it into the snow episode. Mm. And so we've got some extra flakes for you here that we're going to brush into your face.
Extra flakes.
But it was snow. It was tiny. And I took a photo, which I intended to share with people to share the magic of this moment. Should I share it with you? I mean,
picture,
it's not very
picture
good.
Picture of your wet palm.
It's not very good for the podcast, this. But I thought what was happening was it was magical. What was happening was magical. It was late March. The sun was in the air, the sky, and snow was falling. It felt like a miracle. And I took this photo.
Are you sending it to us?
I'm going to send it to you, even though it's not very good for the podcast, but...
Yeah. What's amazing about this photograph is there appear to be two shavings of cheese on the floor as well.
and a toenail, I think.
Obviously, I'm scattering cheese as I go, Ben. How am I going to find my way home?
Well, you've got to attract the snowflakes to something.
Speaking of cheese, somebody on maybe our Patreon or Twitter was talking about how they'd bought Branson Pickle based on our having mentioned it on this podcast.
Jolly good, yeah.
And she talked about how she'd eaten it with various things and that... I think she had enjoyed it, but she felt it was quite strong, quite overpowering.
Yeah, hopefully she felt warned about that.
And I think she felt that she hadn't fully mastered or kind of worked out exactly the context in which it was best to have it, although we've been very clear that it's cheese sandwich and basically nothing else.
Yeah.
But I think it felt like she'd been trying it on various cuisines and it hadn't necessarily been working. And then she finished the message by saying, anyway, tomorrow I'll be trying it on some scrambled eggs, so let's see how that goes.
And, oh God!
And I mean, I assume that's already happened, and she's now dead. I think probably, or
she will be, or as good as. I think she'll. She may just be one of those people that wanders around with a horrified expression on their face and never speaks again.
Yeah, she may come across James Galway in the woods. Him there with his flute and deer legs.
I mean, she's been faced with a truth that mankind is not ready to handle.
I think actually. Probably only James Galway could actually help her in that situation because...
But he won't.
If he can... Well, exactly, he won't. Just because he's so bloody minded about these things. But he could. He could play his magic flute.
His pickle pipe.
His pickle pipe. And the pickles would dance out of her mouth, they say. The individual pickles dance out of your tongue. Apparently, it's one of the most horrific things a human being can do. And then James Galway, but of course they have to go somewhere, doesn't he? So he then has to sort of flute them into...
Another vessel.
Yeah. And normally it'll be a rival flautist.
whoever's angered him.
Yeah, flautists are very, very angry people.
They've got to be edgy.
Yeah. But just for the avoidance of doubt, I would say if you do buy Branson Pickle, and I would, it is worth you buying, it's nice stuff, do not pair it with an egg under any circumstances.
No. Egg and pickle, yeah, pickle and egg, those things.
Yeah, that combination should only exist at the bottom of a bin.
Well, pickles, of course, Branson, pickles are like snow, aren't they?
Here we go.
Ben?
Yep.
Mike, do you agree? As long as we all agree, I think we can move on. Just all three of us agree, we can state that and move on, I think.
Well, because no two sections of a pickle are exactly the same.
No two sections of a Branston pickle are the same.
If you woke up and everything you saw out of the window was blanketed in Branston pickle, you'd go and tell your family.
You would.
And you'd get a sledge.
And your children would run out and start making a pickle man. A lovely, sloppy, shiny, greasy pickle man.
If you want to add a kind of romantic edge to the end of a movie, just dropping loads of Branston pickle on the protagonist will work.
Yeah. And also the lovers can go for a little walk and have a little montage, can't they, in a pickle-covered area, and they can make pickle angels.
Pickle fight, throwing pickle at each other.
Throw pickle at each other in a flirtatious way, then they can make pickle angels. Don't eat yellow pickle.
Okay. Yeah.
I ate yellow pickle only yesterday.
Piccalilli?
Yeah.
Lovely.
I've got a massive homemade batch.
Really? Homemade?
Yeah.
You made your own piccalilli?
Yeah. I made about 6 or 7 jars of piccalilli.
What?
Send us a jar over then, for goodness sake.
I should send you both a jar.
You make your own piccalilli. I think piccalilli, now this is, if we thought Branston pickle was going to blow people's minds, we just mentioned it in passing, it became a bit of a thing. Piccalilli, that's going to, I mean, I didn't really understand what piccalilli is. I find it...
Piccalilli is the empress of pickled goods, as far as I'm concerned. It really
is. But to me, it's too... Because I love vinegary food. I love food that makes all your little internal mouth glands start squirting and makes you, like, your eyes, like, bloodshot and... fucking, come on!
Your nose is running. Your knees are giving way. Your ears are bleeding.
Rashes breaking out all over you. All your hairs are on end.
Your bowels give in.
Your bowels just give in. They go, we've been holding the fort for years, and it's over. The chopper's leaving the embassy roof. Because I love eating pickled onions. I love tart food that really punches you in the face. But piccalilli to me, what is it? What the fuck is that?
Henry, I'm just going to get you. I'm going to show you the jar because I want your glands to start firing. I think it'll happen just visually.
Okay.
Should we do this as a scientific experiment?
Yeah. I reckon.
Okay, give me a sec.
So all I know about piccalilli while he's getting it is that it's a bright yellow. It's in the same world as Branston pickle. It's a bright yellow sort of concoction that's incredibly tart and zingy and odd.
I've returned.
Let's have a look.
Ready?
Yeah. Hang on.
It's a lovely colour.
Oh, I think it's working. I'm getting saliva under my tongue. I can see the acrid. I can see the vinegary, kind of acidy. Yeah. The power of it. What are those little black circles?
They're mustard seeds.
Mustard seeds, of course. Yeah.
And it's sort of squirming slightly. It's partly alive, I think.
is there a newt in there? You didn't forget to kill all the newts, did you? You've got to kill the newts, Ben.
Didn't boil it for long enough.
You didn't boil that newt for long enough.
The one thing in the recipe, they made a big song and dance about sterilising the jar.
I didn't sterilise the jar.
Oh, good on you. Well, the only way to do that for sure is with urine, isn't it? It's another of the appetising details. I think there's a broader point here to be made about British food in general, which is that, you know, obviously there are great cuisines in Europe, aren't there? Mm-hmm.
Czech. Bulgarian.
Yeah. Austrian. Finnish.
The big four.
Big four. But in Britain, a lot of our stuff is just... Like a pickle, all it is it's a way of preserving vegetables in a sort of plague-ridden medieval universe, isn't it? Which is, look, we're all covered in boils, yeah?
Almost anything and everything can kill us, like rat.
Yeah. Rats can kill us. Fleas can kill us. Dogs can kill us because they've got rats and fleas on them.
Yeah. The water can kill us.
The water can kill us. The local... feudal lord is killing us right now during this conversation. I can see
the weak beer that you're feeding your children can kill us.
Yeah. The beer just isn't strong enough. It's killing our children. How mild that beer is. It's just not. The alcohol percentage is so low, it's absolutely, it makes me feel awful giving it to them at breakfast. and it's a completely grim universe, and it's just, how are we going to make it through the winter? We're not going to make it through the winter. Yeah. I know. But should we at least try? All right, just for the hell of it. Well, see that those carrots and onions that the feudal overlord gave us in return for five of our daughters? Yeah, those three carrots and an onion in the corner there. Yeah. Well, they're going to be inedible in a couple of months. How are we going to eat them then? Well, if we cover them in really, in like sort of, what, vinegar? What is that?
Gone off wine.
If we cover them in gone off wine, it'll mean that they won't actually go mouldy as such, and they'll sort of take your face off.
Because all the going off has been taken up by the gone off wine.
Because the wine's already gone off. So you put something that has already gone off with something that hasn't gone off, and they get a bit confused and they come up with a kind of truce. And no one goes off. So no, but isn't it that's what that it, pickle? It's just.
Well, a weird. I read about this yesterday.
It's yeah
about how in French cuisine, in La France, the kind of sauce you'll get with a meal will be similar to the meal. So if you eat a pheasant,
it'll be with pheasant sauce. So there'll be a pulverized, they'll pulverize a pheasant and pour it on the pheasant.
Yeah. But it's like based on the cooking juices, and thing where it feels like it's part of the same thing. Whereas in British cooking, you get something incredibly bland, like a boiled ham that doesn't really taste of anything, and then just put something mad on it, like
chives,
ketchup,
just something sort of piquant and whatever. Like so,
yeah.
Because people talk about British food being very bland, but it isn't really, because every time we eat roast beef, you put horseradish on it, or
apple sauce, isn't it?
Which exactly, like a fruit
they sauce. They find that absolutely hilarious in France.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. They certainly used. There was a point where, you know, because they do quite a lot of them do look down on British food, I think, a bit.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah,
yeah.
And they go, Pepsi would like some apple sauce with this. And I'm like, I've just come in here to buy a shovel. maybe you'd like applesauce on the handle. Yes.
What do they think of applesauce then? Do they have it, or is it like baby food?
They think it's weird to have it on meat. They think the fact that we have fruity sauces on meat, I think they find weird. But in France, it's like it was the chicken with its juices.
Yeah, but you don't want pork with its juices, do you? Pork juice
with the juices of its mother.
Yeah,
with the milk, hair, and juices of its mother.
Yeah. I thought the bloody planet was meant to be getting warmer, not snowing in April. So maybe the boffins at the so-called universities could. Rethink them, methinks.
I'd like to show them the state of my windscreen first thing in the morning in the middle of April. Covered in ice. Yeah.
So we're supposed to believe the ocean, the sea level's rising, are we? So if I think I'm not wrong in saying that over 80% of the world's surface is water, so in that case, the world's actually getting slightly bigger. In which case, it's actually getting slightly nearer to the sun, in which case that'll probably evaporate the spare water from about where we started, aren't we? So, excuse me.
No, no, when I fell. Also, countries float, don't they? You know, so by all means, you know, we're on an island, it's just going to keep bobbing up to the surface like a cork. Good point, my understanding.
Because my uncle swam under it.
Yeah, he was the first man, wasn't he, to circumundervent. Circumundervent the UK. Ben, your backdrop, because it's a new place, is quite a blank wall, isn't it?
Yes, it's just a white wall.
I was just thinking, it's a shame that, you know, nowadays that is the that's the backdrop, isn't it, that we all live with. Whereas there was a time when it would have been, you know, huge rocks or stones, you know, like a sort of medieval castle sort of.
Or iguanodons roaming across the plains.
Exactly. In the tombs of the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
You taking the times. Are you slagging off my new house?
No, I'm just saying it's reminded me of the banal nature of the lives we all lead.
I'll ask, here's a quiz. What would you say the colour behind my head is?
Okay, oh, so
it's not just going to be white, is it?
And Mike's got a similar colour. It's kind of
ox cream.
If I was naming that colour, I would call it dark egg.
These are both good names. So when we moved in, it was white, and I've now painted it almost oyster.
Oh,
But it is essentially white.
Yeah, but it's been proven that people can't live with an actual white backdrop because people think it's a piece of A4 paper and they start scribbling on it.
That's right.
Or there's some reason it's never. I think white is too much, isn't it? But it's always
your wall will be covered in to-do lists.
Exactly.
By the end of the day.
Yeah.
And doodles.
Almost oyster. Almost.
Is that what it was called? Literally, it's called Almost Oyster.
It's called Almost Oyster.
Dry cloud.
You're good at these, Mike.
Imagine if you were in a restaurant and you said, "I'd like the bouillabaisse, please." It's a French seafood based soup, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
quite a hearty one, hearty and complex.
And they say, "Yes, good choice, sir." And then you went, "What is the main seafood you've gone for as the base ingredient?" And the guy went, "Well, it's almost oyster." You'd be like, "Well, I'm almost going to eat a meal here, but I'm actually not going to, so I'm leaving." Yeah. So, oh, fuck's sake.
Get in the car, darling. We're going to Mackie D's.
Do you know what I mean, though? I mean...
Yeah,
it's not clear what the point of that story is. It satirically, is it making fun of the seafood industry? Is it making fun of
the French?
In which case, some could say about time.
Were you making the point? I think you're making the satirical point that an oyster is a binary choice. You're either an oyster or you're not an oyster.
Yeah, exactly. And the nearest thing you might think is like mussels are a bit like oysters because they're
almost oyssters. You might say.
They are almost oyster.
Clam is possibly another.
Clams are quite almost an oyster. Yeah.
Almost oyster. Are they suggesting that oyster would be too much if it was called oyster?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That would be a bit, that would be too sort of indulgent, wouldn't it? It would be too.
Almost trout.
From our new seafood, almost range. Why not sit back and relax in a snug little sitting room covered in almost moray eel? Who's that grinning in the corner? Is it one of your children or your spouse? No, it's the face of a moray eel because moray eels are drawn to the moray eel paint range. It's that really. So it's one of the only things that will get them out of their little underwater caverns.
Discovering whether or not something is a moray eel or almost.
And if you've got an infestation of actual moray eels, then you can call two people. You can call the government, or you can call the pest people, and you can call the paint people to say thanks. The paint's working a treat.
Sorry, how is your paint dealt with your moray eel infestation? It's attracted more moray eels to your house.
I've lost track. I'm not sure.
I think you've exacerbated the problem.
So yeah, they're all different, aren't they? They say, aren't they? Snowflakes. How do we know that for sure, though?
Who's keeping an eye on it, you mean?
Yeah.
I think actually it's not true that they're all the same. It's one of those kind of...
It's not true that they're not all the same.
Popular myths.
Mm.
Because they're just sort of random, aren't they? So the likelihood is that they are all different, but probably given that billions and billions have fallen over the years.
Right, yeah.
I feel I'm really, you know, when you start talking and you feel yourself wandering into this might be bollocks territory, and I simply don't know this, but I think there's a chance, isn't there, that there have been two identical ones? In the same way that if you got an infinite amount of monkeys...
And they're drawing snowflakes.
And they're drawing snowflakes, they would occasionally, in between writing Hamlet and King Lear, come up with it.
Yeah. It'd be so frustrating, wouldn't it, when some of those monkeys would write one where it literally is King Lear right until the last word of the last scene, which is... Oh, fuck's sake, we were so... Oh, damn,
we've been here bloody ages.
I've been here ages. Trying to... Oh...
Lots of references to bananas in this version of Othello.
Just a few more bananas than usual. Is this a banana I see before me? Yes, it is. And it's also a banana that's behind you. There's loads of bananas, Hamlet. You run a banana shop.
Soft, what banana through yonder window breaks? He's throwing a banana at me.
I mean, to peel or not to peel, is that anything? Just...
I think the hairiest actual driving moment happened near here once when I had a blowout just on a tight corner. And I must have, I think there'd been some building works or something, and just one of my tyres sort of exploded. And I did the old full 360 on a sort of dual carriageway going at speed. And that was quite terrifying. But I didn't think I really understood what had happened. And then drove to where I was going. It took about half an hour with people honking me the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Did a job of work where I was at. Came back, people honking me the whole way back.
Well, you didn't realise that one of your tyres had exploded?
No. Because I think I was just so confused and rattled.
You were assuming they'd seen the gig in Aberystwyth, weren't you?
Exactly.
You were just, yep, cheers, guys.
Assumed that, I don't know, maybe there was just a perfectly normal reason why the whole car was on a sort of weird tilted angle. Strange.
Oh, God.
Just strange metallic noises. The whole way back, and finally pulled over and realised, this whole tyre completely exploded, and worked out when it would have happened.
Can you replace a tyre, Mike?
I did replace a tyre.
Bloody hell!
Then and there.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well, I assume you replaced the wheel rather than the tyre.
I don't know. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I did replace the wheel.
Yeah, it took you 2 weeks, didn't it? You had to check into a Travelodge.
Oh yeah.
But you did it.
Yeah, I had to take charities, and Elvis had to book a man to come and do it for me, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
But
yeah.
You paid him
did it, exactly,
out of money that myself. You borrowed off your wife, exactly, who you married. So, yeah.
Yeah, which gave me an enormous sense of well-being.
I don't understand, obviously, how the car works and stuff. Can you do stuff under the bonnet, Mike? Can you get that?
God, no.
Can you?
No, you have not been, you know, checking the oil or whatever.
I can raise a bonnet and then just kind of like recline onto the engine and then just wink at passers-by.
Yeah.
With a bit of old 50s rock and roll playing in the background.
With your sleeveless, high-visibility tabard on.
Yeah.
And your paunch just lolling into the engine structure a bit, isn't it? Sometimes your paunch...
Slowly griddling your paunch.
And a nice sort of sizzling sort of smell coming
lovely
off.
Lovely smell of griddled paunch.
Which really turns some heads, doesn't it? And then obviously, it's quite hard to extricate yourself then, isn't it? Without leaving some of your paunch behind in the engine structure, isn't it? So normally...
And also, you don't want to move too much because you don't want to ruin those perfect grill marks. So
so you have to call the ambulance. It's one of those ones where you have to call 999, don't you? You have to call the ambulance preemptively.
But you ask for the goose fat unit. Yeah.
You want the goose fat unit because they're going to have to come and slather you.
Yeah.
Slather you hard.
And bring some potatoes.
Because once you've separated me from this engine structure, we're going to have a roast off.
We scaled what you could say is the north face of Mount Chat. One episode this month, but who has dared to even glance at the southern face?
Well, many have died on the southern face.
Many have died on the southern face. It's just...
And their bodies are still there.
Sort of broken pickaxes.
Yeah.
Bits of shin and frayed rope. And a single sultry goat rolling its weird sideways eyes at you.
And if that goat could tell you a tale, be sure it might sound something a little like this.
Yeah? Goat, yeah.
That's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, good. Nice little segue, that.
That's nice. That was nicely done, that. Mm. I'm watching a documentary about Kilimanjaro at the moment.
Too late. No one wants to hear it.
Is it good?
Well, no, it's one of those things where they started making the documentary not knowing whether anyone would die.
Yeah.
But hoping.
Exactly. Fingers crossed. They went up, came down, no one died.
Oh.
But they've still got to put it out, I suppose, just because they've made it. But I mean, complete waste of 2 hours. They literally all made it back. The Swiss lady made it back. The German guy made it back. The Italian guy made it back. The posh English bloke made it back. Fucking livid.
The whole going up Everest thing is sort of mad and sick.
I tell you what, I had a phase where I was absolutely fascinated by Everest to the extent that I watched the film Everest.
You pushed yourself that far?
I went that far.
Hang on, Henry. I think you and me went to see Everest in the cinema.
Sorry.
Together.
Why didn't you ever remember anyone who's been to the cinema?
Sorry. I have a really hurtful habit, which I've hurt Mike with many times. Well, I just
now you've got me as well.
I have no memory of people I see films with. Have we discussed this on the podcast?
No,
I think so. I always forget who I saw a film with because I'm so wrapped up in the fictive dream of cinema.
Of Everest.
The miracle of cinema. I never remember who I went with. Because whenever I refer to... is it Avatar that I saw with you, Mike?
You know very well it was Avatar.
I know.
and a number of others.
It's a little neg trick that I use to keep my friends close, but not too close. Keep your friends feeling a little bit insecure, Henry. Don't let them. Just keep them on edge. Sometimes I'll organise cinema trips just so I can pretend to have forgotten them. Oh, I know.
But yeah, I think I've seen two films with you in the cinema, Henry. Everest, which I think was just quite bollocks, but in kind of a fun way. And a pervy Korean film where a guy was shagging an octopus.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing.
It was good.
That was really good.
We all went to see a Star Trek together once. Does anyone remember that?
Mike, you're such a cinema trip rememberer.
I don't get out much.
I don't think I came to that. I would have remembered that.
There are two.
I don't think I was there.
There are two. I think there are just two.
I'm staking a reputation. I wasn't there.
No, I vaguely remember that. But I do think there are two types of people in the world. That basically there are the people that remember who they went to cinema trips with, and that's Mike. So Mike, you see, Mike goes to cinema with people, and that night he'll have gone home and he'll have gone. Dear diary, such a magical day today. It was me and two of my favourite people in the world, Benjamin Partridge, Henry Packer, all the three of us together. And it was so important for all of us. It was such a wonderful moment. I almost didn't even notice the silly old film. Who cares when you're with two people sitting in a row? And I remember, Ben was wearing his little blue shoes, wasn't he?
Sailor outfit.
He was in his little sailor outfit, set off the blue in his eyes. Oh, I do hope he doesn't grow a moustache for many, many years. He's such a wonderful stage at the moment. And Henry, well, just watching Henry blossoming day after day is an absolute honour. I mean, it's... Oh.
Telling me to shush throughout the film in his own little silly little way that he does.
Oh, that funny little way he does with me when he goes... What was it, Mike? Bloody film. It's so special because it's just for me. And then, but for me, for people like me, it's like I'd go home and be like, the special effects were really good. I'm not sure about the narrative structure. There was a mild irritant to my right. May have been male. Slightly got in the way of things. Mental note: one day try to buy yourself a home cinema with one seat. So Ben, you went to see, what was it? Oh, what were we talking about?
We saw Everest in the cinema.
We saw Everest.
And you were confessing that you had a fascination with Everest.
Yeah. I found it utterly fascinating. And it's really quite, you know, people often say, what is it, Henry? Why is it? How do you do it? Why are you so fascinated by Everest? Like, I can't really explain, you know, I just saw those things. Because it's quite inspiring in a way, you know, to be... well, people get obsessed with it, don't they? And some people get obsessed with it and like, I will climb it. I must climb it. And I get obsessed with it in more of a way of like, I will watch the film Everest twice. Because I did also probably watch it on Netflix. But
there's kind of like an unlimited amount of documentaries about.
Yeah.
There's one called K2.
Yeah, it's
about K2.
It's become,
basically, every large mountain has got a documentary about it in which someone dies.
Snowden. In the summer of 2015, an unprecedented 3 Rymans on the face of Snowden ran out of HP inkjet printer cartridges for the HP 219/W model and the 214/X model.
Yeah. That sort of thing.
On that day, everyone died.
Their bodies remain unclaimed.
Magenta!
Unclaimed next to the train station. It's not clear why the bodies litter the summit.
Yeah, there's a subgenre. There's a new genre, isn't there? There's a genre of Everest and like mountain films.
Genre. There's lots of climbing documentaries at the moment.
Yeah.
Have you seen them? There's one called Free Solo?
No, I didn't know
that.
And it's like guys who like will climb a mountain that's never been climbed without any ropes. And it's the kind of documentary where if you look up, they've got talking heads from other mountaineer types.
Yeah.
And if you ever Wikipedia them, 50-50 chance they will have died in some sort of horrific accident.
Oh, God.
And they're into that sport where you put on like a wingsuit and jump off a mountain
What is that, base jumping? Is that what it is?
Yeah, base jumping, I think,
is that with a parachute?
When you do a parachute, yeah. And then I think it's just called wing suiting.
Just wear a helmet, guys, okay?
It won't help.
But it will keep the helmet economy going.
But yeah, when you do sort of get coshed to death by, you know, various sort of rocks that you land on, it means that it'll be easy to sort of scoop up your brains. Sometimes when I'm watching sometimes Amy will say to me, Henry, don't do it. Don't watch another Everest film. Don't. Why are you always drawn back to that infernal place?
I'm sorry, darling. It's bigger than me. It's just something I have to do. But one day you might not finish one of those films. I'm scared.
The thing about going up Everest is, it is something that in 1952, whatever, was an absolutely huge achievement and almost superhuman feat.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas now, you've just got to be rich.
It's a hugely expensive achievement.
Yeah.
But it's still arguably very hard. But
oh, God, it's hard, but it's not impossible. And it sort of feels like if you did it, the kind of people who do it would want you to be impressed by the fact they'd been there.
Mm. But most people, their first question would be, where do you get the money for that then?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'd be impressed by how sort of, successful an entrepreneur they were. Because, that person would come down with sort of like, you know.
They can both afford the trip and they can afford the time to do the trip.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Mm.
Oh, I'm really impressed by the way you've disrupted the chopping board space. Well done.
Yeah. And they'd be like holding up the fact they've got like bloody stumps for hands and they're sort of hypothermically half dead and bits of their, and they're all like, well done. You really changed the way that the, certainly the hotel sector thinks about sourcing its soap. That's incredible.
No, you're right. I think Uber for gardeners is a good idea.
Photographic plates, you say? So you don't even have to take a picture of your breakfast. It's done for you.
But from underneath. So it's generally just a sort of black shadowy.
Point blank range.
It's a point
Namely
blank.
Gravy.
Generally just different silhouette shapes of gravy. But it's huge with the 14 to 17 demographic. You did it.
So yeah, maybe I'm a bit mean taking away from people, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like the achievement that it was.
Mm.
If you do it now, you're not Edmund Hillary, right? Is what I'm trying to say,
no,
I think.
That's true. Yeah.
And also, I think what seems to happen is you get to the top and you're there for no time at all. Like, because everything is just the death clock.
Well, because you've got to go. You've just got to go. got to go.
Yeah.
No time for yourself. We've got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're there, you have to be like, okay, it's 3 for 2 on Manila folders. I'm just going to get them. You can't be saying, oh, shall I get some highlighters?
No, grab what you can and go. Yeah.
Does that mean it's quite hard for the modern Edmund Hillary type then? If you are that type, you know, because it's there and all that kind of stuff.
Do you think they've run out of places to conquer, you mean?
It's quite hard to explore uncharted territory these days, isn't it?
That's a good point.
And again, very hard without immense beans. Like, unless you're able to fly yourself in your own, unless you're able to sort of Bezos yourself into space.
Well, I was trying to think of what the most recent kind of Edmund Hillary-esque thing was, and I think it probably is. Do you remember Felix Baumgartner jumping out of space and landing on the Earth?
Oh, yeah.
That feels like something that's a bit like that. Although it does feel very, like, Everest feels very, like, elemental, like, we will conquer this thing.
That's it. And things like the deep sea stuff, again, it's requiring a huge amount of beans to go down and look at some weird fish no one's ever seen before.
But we've been everywhere, have we? Is there anywhere we haven't been? Well, I say we, I don't mean us three, I mean the human race.
Because even sort of not very well charted bits of like the Amazon, on the whole, it's become, you know, accepted that we should probably just leave those bits alone and leave those indigenous tribes alone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true that there's less to...
Yeah, we are a race of people who've put a Ryman's in the Mariana Trench.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's
and that's
next?
It, isn't it? Yeah.
What now?
Well, then it's about, can we build a Ryman's planet, isn't it, in space? That's the Rymania or Rymaniflax 5.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? That's the dream, to create the Ryman's planet. But can you send a Ryman's into space?
Because the little one on the International Space Station, that doesn't count, does it? Because that's just like a sort of...
That's not a full Ryman.
It's a very...
You can't do returns there.
It's very small. They don't do the gift cards.
They only accept euros.
They've only got a rotation staff of 6 people. So that's 2 on the shop floor at any one time, 2 in the stockroom, and 2, you know...
2 on break.
2 on break at any one time. So it's not...
Yeah, yes, it's a Ryman's, but
yeah,
it's not the Ryman's experience.
No, yeah. I mean, yes, they do the full range of products. They do the notice boards, they do the cork boards, the flip charts, the knobos.
5 different sizes of bull clip.
They do the full 5 bull clip.
Mm-hmm.
They have a full size cutout of Theo. Morris and Theo. Morris Ryman.
And Theo Ryman.
The founders. But it's just a bit cramped, isn't it?
There's that wonderful bit in Apollo 13, isn't there, where obviously they're having trouble, and then back in Houston, they empty the contents of a Ryman's onto the table and they go, this is all they've got.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
including a Ryman staff member on the table.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who, of course, was sacrificed.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got hole punchers. They've got A4 paper, A5 paper, A3 paper, A2 paper, up to A7 paper.
They've got some glitter colouring pens.
But
we'd only use them up unless it's a real crisis, because they are expensive.
Remember to shake the gold pen before you use it, or you'll just get transparent liquid. It's too late, he's done it. And
that's the trouble with the sort of radio time lag, isn't it, between Houston and and the craft.
He's worn through the head of the Pritstick. He's worn through the glue. He's down to the bit of mechanism.
You ever had that with the Pritstick?
Oh, yeah.
And what he has to do at the end, isn't it? At the end, it's so tense, isn't it? He has to perfectly line up, doesn't he?
A pencil with a pencil sharpener at 0G.
He has to get it straight in.
But there's a broken bit of pencil at the end of the pencil sharpener that he hasn't seen. The audience has seen it. We know it's there.
The audience knows it's there.
We know he's on a fool's errand.
It's such a good device, isn't it? Because that pencil's going to jut up against the bit that's already in there. And all he has to do is shake it, and it'll go, oh, it's so... Oh. Yeah.
But it's 0G, so you can't shake it.
You can't shake in 0G.
Can't shake in 0G.
Everything's shaking anyway. It's already shaking. You know what I mean? And then there's that, well, it was actually two tenths. They cut it out, the director's cut.
Mm.
You can see in the director's cut, there's a bit where he has to line up the hole puncher with a bit of paper,
mm-hmm.
with a bit of A4 paper, do the hole punch, and then hope that when he puts it in the lever arch file with the other papers, that that he's got the hole punch holes perfectly in the middle of the page to sort of line up with them. Otherwise, it'll be slightly over the top or over the bottom. Do you remember?
It'd be a bit frustrating.
More than a bit frustrating. Slightly more than a bit frustrating. Quite frustrating.
That's the end of part one. Please move on to part two.